Welcome to another session of Just Me Podcast. Today, we are joined by the wonderful Ewan Hoffman. Ewan, please do tell us who you are and what you do.
Hello, everybody. I am the lead chaplain to a place called Hinkley Point C, which is a nuclear new build on the North Somerset coast. And I lead a small team of volunteer chaplains, but I have pastoral and spiritual care for over 10,000 people, most of whom are construction workers. There are other kinds of engineers here as well. Very busy place. Prior to that, I was a Baptist pastor for 30 years. So actually now I'm a Baptist pastor seconded to the Church of England, paid for by Hinkley Point C. And prior to that, I was an electronics research engineer. So I designed audio systems and telephones. And in my spare time, I was a DJ with Temptation Discotheque.
Which is lovely.
When you go from that to being a pastor. So that's a look at my past. Interesting enough, so I am an engineer. So I fit this environment. I don't think everybody would. It's all about right person, right place. But because I'm an engineer, I get these people here and feel equipped to love and care for them, really. Predominantly, but not exclusively, people who are going through tough times for real reasons.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so there you go. Hope that kind of made sense.
But how did you get from being an engineer and doing your disco, your DJing, to becoming a pastor? How does that...
Yeah, so I was the kind of guy at school with the... I didn't have glasses, but I would have had horn-rimmed glasses and a soldering iron in my hand.
Brilliant.
And I just loved electronics and anything to do with music, so... By the time I was kind of 16, it was logical to put those two together, and we created Temptation Discotheque in Bishop Stortford, and I got a job at a place called STL Harlow, which were designing integrated circuits. And now the thing is, when I was 15, 16, 17, I wasn't a Christian. I became a Christian at university just before my 20th birthday. And then when I was 22, I started full-time in the labs. STL sponsored me to go to university. Gosh, those were good days.
Wow.
you had a grant and you had sponsorship as well. So there I am, I'm a Christian in the labs making things. Everyone takes the pee out of you because you're a Christian. It's just par for the course, right? You expect it. But when the chips are down, it's you and, you know, do you want to chat? Can we chat over lunchtime? It wasn't happening all the time, but it was happening regularly. You know, can you pray for this or that? And I remember thinking, well, actually, I'm paid to work, but I enjoy doing this. And I remember thinking, maybe I should do this more. And that's really how my call started. I thought that I'd end up spending my time predominantly helping people who didn't have any faith through life and into faith. And then I become a Baptist pastor. I go to theological college, I become a Baptist pastor. My first church was Bushy Baptist Church near Watford. And eventually what you end up doing is lots of things other than what you were called to. I'm not complaining. I had four good churches. They were lovely. They were wonderful days and busy days. I know people think pastors don't do anything, but that's not true. If you've got a live church, you know, congregation of 300 or something, doing 80-hour weeks. Certainly I was in the early days before I learned how to not have a nervous breakdown over it all. You end up doing lots of, you're running an organization, you're running a machine, and you end up, other people end up doing what you want. So you have a team that you employ. And I wasn't spending much time with people who weren't Christians. So how I ended up here after four churches, I was determined, I walked something called the Camino de Santiago. In fact, I'm about to do it again. I'm doing it in March. You can stalk my walk if you want. 500 miles, trying to raise 50K for one of our mental health charities here. And I walked it with a good buddy, praying about what I should do next. And I come back and I say to my church, I'm not leaving you, but you know there's life in the old dog yet. I've probably got one more thing in me, and I'm not your future. This lad is, and I pointed to Matt, who is my associate pastor, most gifted guy I've worked with in 30 years. Sorry if I'm offending everybody else I've worked with who's listening. but I said, he's your future, so let's do succession. Let's do succession planning. We'll take a year, we'll take 3 years, we'll take 5 years over it. And I said, the only thing that could precipitate that is if something like a chaplaincy came up at Hinkley Point C. I actually said it. 4 days later, I got the job. Matt storms into my office and says, What have you done? I told you they'd want you. And I said, I didn't think they would. So we had 3 months in which to do transition, and the church is blossoming under his leadership.
Oh,
lovely. Rod arrives here. And of course, the immediate thing that met both of us, you won't know this, was 2020 when I started, was COVID. So, you know, people were nervous about having a chaplain. I'm the first salaried chaplain to the construction industry. And pardon my language here, but there was someone saying, what, we're going to have an effing religious bloke on site. What do you want one of those for? And then I'd been here a few weeks and COVID hit and it was like, thumbs up, he's our effing religious bloke. Oh. And so, you know, I did ceremonies for people. It was like a typical thing would be, ear chaplain, I'm not religious, but Gran has died and it's locked down and I can't get to the funeral. Can you do something religious with me? So I do a little ceremony for them to help them say farewell. I tailor it according to their needs. I bring faith into it as much as is asked for or is relevant. And so often it is really relevant. I'm telling you, people are still spiritual beings. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, a fair amount of what I do is not only pastoral care, but is spiritual care.
So what have you learned along the way in your wonderful years on this wonderful planet?
That my strength is found in Jesus. Sorry, that probably sounds trite to most people who are listening, but that is where my strength and my identity comes from. That's where, that's what helps me do what I do. Mm. What else have I learned in my life along the way? If I could say, what would I say to my young self? I'd say, Ewan, don't worry about things so much. Oh. I mean, obviously, worrying obviously works because none of the things I ever worry about happen. That's an interesting phenomenon, isn't it? That for some people, that precipitates further worry because they have this unconscious understanding that actually I worried it didn't happen, so there was value in the worrying. Friendships are everything. Marriage is everything. The family is the foundation for the whole of society. Those are the kind of things that I've learned. And actually, my life has got more simple, Sid. You know, when I was 20, I knew everything, had an answer for everything. Now I know nothing. You know, so it's about loving one another. It's about keeping God at the center of things, the main in the plane, I would say now.
Oh, how lovely. I mean, I love that thing about family, and it is, isn't it? I mean, when you boil it all down, this is what we are, and that's the most important thing. But what obstacles have kind of either hindered or helped you along the way?
I'd say they do both. Obstacles both hinder and help. The question is how you deal with them. Yeah. Most things you can live with or you can overcome. By that, I don't mean that we're ever perfect. I think we all walk with a limp. That would be a term that I use. But pain enlarges your heart. And there has been pain along the way. You know, there's been illness. There's been loss. There's been seemingly unanswered prayer. There's been loads of questions. But that, I guess, has enlarged my heart. I would say over the years, I've moved from being a bounded set person to a centered set person. So in the 20s, I had everything all nailed down, but life wasn't as simple as that.
Mm.
You know, there were boundaries to everything. I'd say I'm centered set now and a lot more relaxed about things. That is very helpful. And the pain of life has enlarged my heart to care for others.
What keeps you going when things get tough? And you mentioned about pain enlarging your heart, but what are the things, I mean, obviously faith, but what else do you sort of fall back to or fall back on?
The simple basic things that give the largest rate of return with regard to mental well-being. So that's regular sleep, regular exercise and friendships and things like that. So I run, I walk, I weightlift, you know, really for my own well-being, not rather than to be a chunk or anything like that. I listen to music a lot. Music sets my mood. So those are the things that I do to keep going when it gets tough. And I pray, and I have very accountable relationships. So I walked the Camino first time with a friend called Paul. We are really accountable to each other. So not only is he a soulmate, but we communicate in the same way. Mm-hmm. So I'm walking with Mickey on the 23rd of March, who is another soulmate, but doesn't quite communicate via WhatsApp in the same way that Paul does. So Paul and I are regularly sending audio WhatsApp messages to each other. What can I pray for? What are you facing today? What are the issues? How are you doing? That is rare, isn't it? We talk about it. We talk about mentoring. We talk about accountable relationships. but to have a few buddies who you can really be honest with and who you can communicate regularly with is a rarity and a privilege. So one of the things that I'm big into here is peer support, is that your friends will get you through. Now, people feel they've got to have the answer for everything. Well, I haven't got the answer for everything. I think I know a man who does, but I haven't got the answer. You do not have to have the answer. You can be a friend, you can listen, and that goes further than you could ever, ever imagine. So it's friendships. I mean, I have hundreds of friends. Having been, you know, a pastor, and I have so many friends, but then I have an inner circle within there. So lots of people can have my affection, but only a few people have my heart and have influence over me. I choose your influence very, very carefully. And my inner core of friends, particularly, you know, Paul and Mickey, those I go skiing with each year, that's a good way of keeping your well-being going. I'm telling you, sunlight, winter sunlight, beautiful outdoors weather, the terror of the slopes, it's very, very good for you. So that's another way in which I help myself.
That's lovely. And what advice would you give to your younger self? I mean, you mentioned about not to worry so much, but what other advice would you give?
I would advise choose your influences very, very carefully. Yeah. Everything is not what it seems. Watch out for the influences, or the things that are trying to control your heart and trying to control you. It's interesting. We rightly have a big emphasis on modern slavery nowadays, but I think my fear is people are more, we're all more enslaved than we ever were. The news is trying to control us and control our emotion, and it's all bad because fear sells. So watch who you give your heart to. This is a little quote from the Bible, right, from the Apostle Paul. Watch what you believe and how you live carefully. Watch your doctrine and your lifestyle carefully. Another bit from the Old Testament. Above all, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. So everything comes from your heart. So, yeah, I counsel myself as a youngster not to be, I was influenced. You know, we all are when we're young, aren't we? And I still am, I'm sure. Mm. Careful, choose your influences very, very carefully.
Brilliant. I love that. And what legacy would you like to leave behind?
Well, come the day when I leave here, I would like to leave a thriving chaplaincy. I've got 6 associate chaplains, and there is room for more if I can find the right kind of people. I would say between us all, we see about 1,000 people a year in pastoral appointments. I'd like it to be written on my epitaph on my gravestone, he loved and lived well.
That's really nice.
And by that I mean that I loved people well, and I lived helping people to the best of my ability, and I loved God and I followed Jesus. So that would be the legacy that I'd like to leave. And actually, I've got to be honest, people need that. People are searching for fulfillment. They need that kind of message that there is somebody who can help you. I mean, so many of our 12 steps programs, don't they, have us, you know, believing there is somebody bigger than us who can help us. So, that's the kind of legacy that I would like to leave behind. You know, I'm a bit of a flagstaff on a hill. Often people will say to me, here, I used to have a faith chaplain. Can I talk with you about this? I remind them of what they had in younger days before something set in and took it from them.
Mm. That's really lovely. And what do you think the magic is that you have in yourself and that you bring to others in the world?
Gosh, I don't think I'm in any way unique. I've been allowed to walk the Camino, and I say to the director who gave me permission, I said, you know, if I'm not close to God, mate, I've got nothing unique to give people. There's far better counselling available than me. My USP and my strong point, my magic, if you're going to use that word, is my faith. That's where my energy comes from. The other slightly unique thing is I'm a bit of a hybrid. I'm an American who speaks with a British accent. So my dad was a Yank, and it's in my genes that I just feel comfortable talking to people. I'm not embarrassed to do so. I thrive on it and I get energy out of it. So I guess that's the part of the genetic magic that I'm wired.
That's really lovely. We always talk about kind of fizzy pop moments. What's your fizzy pop moment when you've done something or you've helped somebody? What is that brings that to you?
One of the moments that really stands out in recent years was in 2019 when I walked the Camino, and I ended up at a place called Gran Yon. And now this won't mean much to many of our listeners. It's a tragedy to me about the division in the Christian church, really, over things that really don't matter. I mean, come on, just grow up, stop squabbling, stop being so individualistic and fit in. So it's a sadness to me, for example, that Roman Catholics and Protestants don't generally share communion together. You can, but I won't go into it. It's too complex, right? And it's been a division in Jesus' church for 500 years, and it grieves me. So I'm in northern Spain, which is particularly Roman Catholic, walking through. I end up in Grandon, and the priest who was there was just so wise. At the end of an evening, he basically had us to sing something. Do you want to sing something? And he did that so that while people are taking Mass, us lot wouldn't be part of it, would be part of it, but wouldn't be part of it. But afterwards, he said some wonderful words. He said through a translator, "The Pope and his bishops recognize that there are many, many Christians who are not part of the Roman Catholic fold. If you can understand that this represents Jesus and you would like to join us, you are welcome to afterwards." Sid, it probably may not mean much to our listeners. I wept, mate, that the discernment of this single Roman Catholic priest who had a village of about 300 people, for me, he overcame 500 years of division. And I took Mass, I took communion, if that's a Protestant term for it, and I wept that for me, 500 years of division had been removed. And it really was a fizzy pop moment. So that's the biggest thing that I draw on in the last 5 years.
That kind of outlook, because that's a lovely outlook. Do you think that helps with the work that you do now?
Yeah, it does. It does. So in my church leadership, I had a lot to do with bringing churches together. I mean, I preached in every kind of church that there is. And when I put my dog collar on, I look more Roman Catholic than Roman Catholics do. Once I was preaching in a church, somebody offered me an envelope, had a bit of money in it. I said, "What's this for?" He said, "Well, you're the bishop's secretary, aren't you?" And I said, "Well, I am today." And I said, "No, I'm not," and handed it back. And they obviously wanted me to pass something on. But there you go. I look more Roman Catholic than others do when I've got my dog collar on. But I love bringing Christians together. I love bringing people of all faiths and none together. We have loads of Christians here. We've got hundreds of Christians who are from Romania. And they're kind of like where we were at 40 or 50 years ago. And you can disagree over jots and tittles, little teeny things that we did in Britain 40 years ago. We've grown up a bit since then. I just love bringing Orthodox, Catholic, Anglican, Baptist together. I guess I'm the Anglo-Bapticostal, if you're wanting a label for me. Yeah, but bringing people together is a big thing for me. It really matters. Yeah.
And in terms of, if you were to use one word to describe yourself, what would that be?
Energetic. If you're looking for what kind of an animal I'm probably a Jack Russell Terrier, full of energy and a go for it kind of person. So yeah, that's energetic is how I would describe myself. I'm quite passionate about things. I think you need that in this environment. There are different kinds of chaplains, okay? I think in this environment here, because it's brutal, you need somebody who believes what they believe quite passionately, but is very, very empathetic and sympathetic to others so they don't shove it down people's throats, because that gets you nowhere. So I think my personality type kind of suits this place.
That's lovely. And if you were to use one word to describe Hinkley Point and the opportunities that you face there, what one word would you use?
Astonishing. Oh. You can get tours for this place. If you live in Somerset, if you Google Hinkley Point Sea Tours, you'll get taken to our visitor centre, and you can drive around this place that is ginormous. It is unbelievable what people can do. And the pictures that you can find if you search online for it, they don't do it justice. You cannot believe the size and the complexity of it all. So I would say this is an astonishing place to be. They are doing something truly, truly amazing that actually we need. It's going to provide 6% of the country's electricity, and we need that. We need that soon, and we need that by a reliable means, you know, that isn't weather dependent. So I would say astonishing, and I would say that of my role here. I had no idea how welcomed I would be, and I've been so welcomed, and people are so respectful of faith. I mean, they use Jesus's name in a way that I wouldn't, okay, and the name of God in a way that I wouldn't. I've got bigger fish to fry than that. But that is changing. And interesting, I notice on Facebook posts and WhatsApp groups, says, yeah, I'm praying for you, mate. I mean, honestly, they didn't say anything like that 4 years ago. That, for me, is a big win. And we do courses here, things like Alpha courses, so people can come and ask about their faith and so on. And the Muslim community, Christian community do a lot together. So, for example, there, I'm just organising now for their Ramadan meal. It'll be either an iftar meal at the end of the day or an Eid meal, and the Christian community are sponsoring it. We're paying for it. You know, it's good. It's a great opportunity to model something that I think the rest of the world can humbly build upon.
Ewan Huffman, thank you. That's really lovely. So insightful. Thank you so much.
Great, Sid. Lovely talking to you. Bye for now.